Yes.
Thank you. Meyer Harris.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and get started. We are expecting Secretaries Blumenfeld and Ross to be here. They're probably running from a previous meeting to get here. So welcome to the 12th Delta Plan Interagency Implementation Committee meeting. This is the first time that DPIC has met in the summer. We usually meet only twice a year in the spring and fall. However, last year some DPIC members suggested that DPIC meet more often and have the meetings run a little shorter. So here we are today, holding today's meeting. Before I begin, I'll take a moment to highlight the science action agenda. Each of our DPIC members, you should have a copy of the document in front of you. The science action agenda is one example of the power of DPIC in combining resources and energy and focusing our resources and energy to share a priority achievement. So I hope that you read the science action agenda. The purpose of today's meeting is to hear the thoughts and ideas of DPIC members, stakeholders, and the public on how the Delta Plan and the Water Resilience Portfolio can work together to help achieve the state's co-equal goals of a more reliable water supply and protecting and restoring and enhancing the Delta ecosystem. So just a quick overview of the meeting. We'll start with DPIC members introducing themselves, then Ryan Stanbraugh, our legislative and policy advisor at the Delta Stewardship Council, will give us about a three-minute overview of the Delta Plan and how the recommendations in the Delta Plan embody the water resilience portfolio principles as stated in the governor's executive order. After Ryan finishes his summary, we'll hear from top leaders of the agencies charged with preparing the water resilience portfolio. So the secretaries of the California Natural Resources Agency, the California Environmental Protection Agency, and the California Department of Food and Ag are, according to the executive order, to prepare a water resilience portfolio that meets the needs of California's communities, economy, and environment through the 21st century. And after the agency secretaries share their thoughts, we'll hear from other DPIC leaders and then ask those of you here today to share your thoughts and ideas in answer to the question posed in Agenda Item 3. So with that, let's move to Ryan Stanbraugh, Agenda Item 2. Welcome, Ryan.
Good morning, Chair Tatayan and DPIC members. Pleasure to be here. The governor's executive order and the subsequent development of a water portfolio, I believe, represents a tremendous opportunity to place California on a path towards resilience for the next century, and implementation of the Delta Plan can serve as a valuable input into that process. Given the interconnected nature of the Delta, with water use patterns across large portions of California, the co-equal goals of statewide water supply reliability and an enhanced Delta ecosystem were intended to fundamentally reshape California water management. For example, if you turn to the second page of the fact sheet before you, you'll see that the 2009 Delta Reform Act set forth a number of policy objectives, including a core resilience component of strengthening regional water self-reliance for water supply purposes. So then, how can the implementation of the Delta Plan and the Water Resilience Portfolio leverage and complement each other? In addition to sharing the common goal of achieving a water-resilient California in the face of climate change, the Delta Plan measures the state's progress towards achieving the co-equal goals through more than 160 performance measures, many of which support the principles guiding the portfolio. This body, the DPIC, provides an established forum with many of the principal state agencies involved in the portfolio discussion, as well as the relevant state, as well as the relevant federal agencies. With a planning horizon that looks out into the end of this century, the Delta Plan relies upon a suite of actions from many of the DPIC agencies, all guided by the necessary adaptive management framework to respond to the dynamic conditions that Californians are certain to face. The Delta Plan, as well as the portfolio, acknowledge the importance of learning from and leveraging the critical work that has been done to date and building upon that work. And finally, being the Delta Plan is reviewed at least every 5 years and guided by the best available science, the plan itself can be relied upon as an accurate and responsive representation of the changes associated not only with management decisions, as well as the natural environment. And in conclusion, as the governor noted in the rollout of his executive order, meeting California's water challenges, particularly in the face of climate change, requires an all-of-the-above approach, something that the implementation of the Delta Plan through a collaborative such as the DPIC can certainly help support. And that concludes my remarks, Madam Chair. Happy to answer any questions.
DPIC members, I just received a note that Kyle Weaver, the interior, I wish I could remember Kyle's title. It's very long. Anyway, Kyle is watching online. He'd like everyone to know that he is participating remotely. And Kyle, I am so sorry that I can't remember your title. But so do DPIC members have any questions for Ryan? Okay. Well, before we move on to agenda item 3, I'll share with everyone here today that you can learn more about the executive order N1019 and the initiative to develop this water resilience portfolio at waterresilience.ca.gov. And you can email input you would like to provide to input@waterresilience.ca.gov. So rather than dive into the details of the executive order, I'll assume that most of the folks here have read it. And I'll open our conversation by saying that this is an incredibly dynamic time in California water management. Just look at the headlines, recent headlines. After 30 years of inching toward integrated water management, we now have the authorities and major policy mechanisms to combine our water management assets in a way that optimizes multiple benefits. Since the 1987 to 92 drought, we've created policies and programs encouraging more water trading, incentivized regional integrated water management, passed landmark flood legislation that literally talks about geomorphological processes of streams and rivers. We've passed the Delta Reform Act, changing up the governance structures addressing our Delta issues. We declared in our statutes the human right to water. We passed the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, now being implemented. And all of us, I imagine, are eager to see the results of initial groundwater sustainability plans. And in 2018, we passed legislation making efficient water use a way of life in California. So with such powerful laws and current agency authorities, it is time for us to step up our creativity and innovation, and we must find ways to move past institutional hurdles so that we can gain the flexibility and adaptability to not only be prepared for climate change impacts, but also be prepared to sustain the function of our water systems and our ecosystems. Whether the disruptions and stresses come from droughts, earthquakes, fires, floods, power outages, or institutional and regulatory uncertainty. So with that, I'll move to the question posed in agenda item 3, and we'll start with our secretaries, and we'll start with Secretary Crowfoot.
Well, thanks so much. Maybe what I can do is give a little context to this effort to develop this water resilience portfolio. and then maybe share some high-level thoughts. So as Susan notes, oh, thanks. Let me start that over.
It was good, Wade. It was good.
Take
brilliant,
two.
Brilliant.
So what I'll do is just provide a little context, and I will repeat myself for those that are streaming this on the web. This effort to develop this water resilience portfolio was driven by Governor Newsom. And he talked in his State of the State about the need to really think long on water. In many respects, our future is bright. Our economy continues to grow. We're the fifth largest economy in the world. In the next couple of decades, we'll have 50 million residents here in California. And we provide a remarkable quality of life for Californians while protecting one of the most biodiverse places in the world. At the same time, we have major challenges on water, and the governor talked about that. We have climate change bringing more variable weather. The drier periods will become drier. The wetter periods will become wetter. That population does potentially increase water demands. We have ecosystems that are in tough shape, and not only we need to stabilize, but we actually need to restore. So I think, as Susan noted, there's a time of opportunity, but also a time of great challenge. So the governor's direction to Karen at CDFA, Jared at EPA, myself, Joaquin at the Water Board, Carla, Chuck, is really to come together across state agency to develop a roadmap for the Newsom administration for the next 4 years around what actions should we be taking in the Newsom administration to really position ourselves for a resilient water future. A future with dependability of clean and safe water for Californians, communities, cities, and towns, and, of course, a future in which we have a thriving environment. And that's the work that we're doing right now. The governor appointed Nancy Vogel, who is here today, as the director of the governor's Water Resilience Portfolio Program. And Nancy is really the spearhead of coordination among our different state agencies to develop this roadmap. Our goal is to have a draft of the water resilience portfolio, this plan or this roadmap, by October, and then actually have a final product by Thanksgiving. As part of this, we want to invite a lot of public input, both from sister agencies at the federal level, so this is a really critical discussion here today, and at the local level, and all manner of stakeholders. As Susan mentioned, we've stood up a website, waterresilience.ca.gov. Many of our state bodies are holding discussions like this. The Water Commission started off a couple weeks ago. Each of our regional water quality control boards is holding meetings. I think CDFA or the Food and Ag Board are holding them too, and we're doing other meetings. We're also inviting written comment. So the idea is, as we really challenge ourselves to think long and to take action in the next 4 years about what we can do, we really want to be informed by other stakeholders, not least of which is our federal partners. So that's really what we're hoping for. I want to compliment Ryan on this two-pager. I wish more issues in government got summarized like this. But this is all discussing today. What is the nexus of the Delta Plan with our water resilience portfolio? God forbid if we create another governmental process that's siloed and that just calcifies on top of existing processes or plans. The idea is integration. And so that's what we're going for today is, you know, what should we consider as it relates to the Delta in the water resilience portfolio? How to leverage the Delta plan for that? So I'll leave it there and then maybe turn to Secretary Ross for any other thoughts or color commentary.
Thanks, Wade. So I want to ditto everything that you said. And I want to talk about, finally, at a time and place where I know we have the resources to assist us, we're truly going to take gigantic steps on integrated resource management. It's been a phrase talked about, but being able to align so many ongoing activities, somewhat new activities, and resources to help make that so. And I think that if we step back and think about going through the drought, what we learned was how much was happening at the local level and making sure that we were connected to that and understood that and built upon that. And I think that going back, I don't know how many years, Carla, to the integrated regional water management plans and having some resources to go there, there is a regional approach starting to happen. And I will have to say, not to call out one particular region of the state, but our first listening session for the State Water Board, our State Water Board, I wish I had water. We just use the stuff, okay? that the State Board of Food and Agriculture held their first meeting in San Luis Obispo, and it was almost all about SGMA, and that's going to be very key. But we were fortunate that a leader from the Central Valley drove to San Luis Obispo to talk about what they hope to do under the San Joaquin Valley Blueprint. This is a remarkable shift in thinking and coming together. And if we have that, knowing of the good work that's happening in Northern California and all of the investments that have been made in Southern California, and now to have this very significant, very productive agricultural region starting to bring leaders together in that same kind of approach, for me, this is very embedded into other ongoing climate strategies, specifically the natural working lands. You've all heard me talk over and over again about the benefits of having the world's most productive agricultural systems here in California, but we can produce, and we do produce, so much more than the crops that we harvest. And understanding those multi-benefits that can come, that as David Guy knows, for birds and increasingly for fish, when we work together and have those shared goals and understand how that can happen, that's going to be one of the best outcomes we can have. This, it's a new generation of thinking about water, about implementing water policy, and about aligning the resources to support those kinds of efforts. So I'm very anxious to think about things like habitat and biodiversity and healthy systems. And it really goes back to my favorite was the Central Valley Flood Plan and really setting out in a new pathway. I also want to add that agriculture is changing significantly, and for some, they don't like the changes that they see. But it's that recognition of every drop of water is precious and is being dedicated to the highest, best economic value. And so losing some of the diversity in agriculture could be an outcome of this, but it doesn't have to be. I think there are other ways for us to think about biodiversity and habitat with what the farming systems of the future will be. It's an exciting time, and it's a positive time. And no state has better resources than here, but it also demands partnerships, and we've got good partnerships with federal water policy folks, as well as at the local and regional level. There are systems in place, and it's up to all of us to optimize that, and the state come in and support that. And I just want to add something for Nancy. As many written comments as possible would be helpful. I heard that message loud and clear, Nancy, but I can't think of a better project manager for us. Thanks.
Thank you both, Wade and Karen. Since Secretary Blumenfeld is not here yet, how about I ask Joaquin, not that you would speak for him, but...
One would never assume to speak for Jared Blumenfeld. I appreciate that. Thank you, Susan. And I don't believe Jared will be able to make it. He did say, in his stead, I should provide some wise words as well. Though I think that Wade and certainly Karen really encapsulated it, so I don't know how much more I could want to add, other than to say that, you know, it is a unique moment where we're trying to synthesize so much of what has already been accomplished through the drought, through the last, you can look at the last, the previous drought, the 90s, late 80s, 90s drought as another marker for California. We did tremendous work then. You know, the statistic that's often brought up is a metropolitan water district expanded their service district by, you know, 5 million people. But since that drought is using equal to or if not less water. And so, you know, there's been a lot of leadership within the state and tremendous certainly during the last drought where, you know, for us here at the State Water Board, we had the Division of Drinking Water come over in the middle of that drought in 2014. We had efficiency and conservation really come to the forefront and be lasting, which is really incredible when you look at the monthly reporting that our urban water producers give to the board and the steady conservation that Californians have locked in since the drought. So, you know, we as a state, you know, our consciousness has been raised a bit around our water use, around where it comes from, how we manage it on a watershed scale, how it goes from our headwaters, through our rivers, onto farms, back into rivers, in through cities, out toilets, into rivers again, and down to the next city, down the river. We are incredibly interconnected, and we have created an incredibly interconnected system with assumptions that haven't held out as to what our hydrology was supposed to be. So we have a tremendous challenge, and it's not just ag that feels the pressure. It isn't just the urban side. It is we as a state. It is, you know, the ecological considerations that are forefront as well. And the question is, how do we do better? And how do we synthesize everything that's there? We're not reinventing the wheel, nor do we feel we are going to with the executive order. But what it will do, and what this is a hope, is stitch us as agencies, sister agencies, into then that collective action for these next 4 years to spell out what we need to do, but also, and this is where this component of it, the listening, is so critical. It is about Californians and their communities saying, what does your community look like in 2050? How do I ensure I have a healthy, thriving river that have salmon runs and that, you know, our agricultural economy is thriving? What does that future look for us in 30 years? Going back 30 years from this moment, knowing how much action, as we've been able to identify through the various legislation that we've been able to pass, but also inaction, in that, you know, some of our conversations are a little stale, and it can be easy to let sometimes old narratives dominate, and the governor spoke to that as well at his State of the State. And so I think what we have is that unique opportunity to synthesize amongst us all as Californians what that looks like, and we're just excited to do our part at the State Board with all of our sister agencies. So,
can I make just maybe three or four more quick points? One is we're not reinventing the wheel. We don't want to reinvent the wheel. The Governor Brown's administration developed this Water Action Plan, which was this broad portfolio of action. So one is we're looking to essentially update that and build on that. We are trying to be as concrete as possible. So in my mind, we fail if we're just talking about priorities in the abstract. We're trying to be as concrete as possible. So that might mean, you know, new processes of coordination that we can actually implement. It might mean specific projects. It might mean, you know, but we're looking for, you know, being able to be publicly transparent about taking action. The third piece is the executive order calls for an assessment to be done around what are the challenges and what are the demands, in coming decades. So Nancy Vogel is spearheading this interagency effort to really develop an assessment. So that would be something that your agencies will want to look at, obviously, and comment on. And then fourth, to Joaquin's point, the commitment moving forward is deeper interagency work. I think we all recognize that we can do better in terms of getting out of our silos and our own statutory authorities and working across agencies. Certainly true for within state government, but hopefully between state government and federal government and local government. So that's another area. And to the extent that our federal and local partners can identify concrete actions around where the state can coordinate better, we welcome that.
Thank you. Thank you, Joaquin and Wade. Since the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Department of Water Resources and the Water Board have a lot of heavy lifting to do in not only helping with the assessment, but also carrying out the actions, I'd like to ask Chuck and then Carla to take part in the conversation, and then the federal counterparts to these agencies. Chuck?
Okay, thank you, Chair, Secretaries. I guess I would add that one of the most impressive things to me was how soon Governor Newsom began talking about water. That's an indicator of the importance. I believe that time is fleeting on these issues and progress is necessary. Each of us have lived the circumstance that water matters to all Californians. often we devolve into arguing about who it matters for the most. And what I find hope in is the current administration's leadership and their ability to really emphasize the need for all of us to do this together. California rises and falls based on our ability to tackle these water issues together, in my opinion, which is why I think the moment we're at is pretty inspiring, daunting, overwhelming, exciting, the collection of adjectives. So time is fleeting and progress is necessary.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, and it's good to be here during the summer even with my colleagues. So just a couple of observations, and just I'll echo what all has been said by the Newsom administration. I'm pretty excited at the department with some of the organizational changes we've been starting to make that I think reflects this theme of integration. I would say first and foremost, as the DWR director going on 18 months, I'm becoming more and more engaged with the climate work that the department is doing and how we are thinking about how we accommodate these extremes and really pushing that information through all parts of the department, our flood section, our state water project, our integrated regional water management section. But one of the things, and we've got a lot of, I think, extremely important kind of newer markers out there. One is the open data piece, which I think is going to be essential for state agencies to be sharing data with one another and making that data available to the public. That is foundational to all the things we want to do to be successful with climate resilience. Obviously, we have Sustainable Groundwater Management Act that's being implemented by well over 100 new local government agencies. We also have the water use efficiency legislation, which will put out another marker that's critical to how we budget our water resources. And then I would also add that in particular, the groundwater management effort is very much focusing the department on the integration of flood protection, in particular, and these themes of managed aquifer recharge that are very much going to be part of our integrated future. And for DWR, the challenge is then how do we approach things on a watershed scale from the headwaters, all of our programs in flood protection and public safety, down through the ag lands and cities that we serve, and down to the coast. And finally, but certainly I think maybe I'm saving some of the best for last, to reflect that and reflect the reality that balancing these needs with important environmental needs requires a multi-benefit approach to many of the projects that DWR has traditionally led on. And on July 1st, we formalized a reorganization at the department that created a new division of multi-benefit initiatives, and that division is going to be charged with making connections across what at times has been a very siloed kind of approach of the department for a whole bunch of important reasons that I think that we're ready to kind of put aside and start pursuing this integrated way of managing water resources for public safety, including drinking water, water access and reliability, and flood protection, and doing it in a way that's going to work better at a landscape scale for the environment.
Great. Thank you, Carla. So I am very glad to see our federal partners here today. And I would like to start with our fish and wildlife friends, if you have any thoughts on how a water resilience portfolio and the Delta Plan can work together in light of what you are charged with. So, Dan, did you want to start?
Sure, I can start. I'm really encouraged by everything I've heard here today. The new way of thinking, the focus on the co-equal goals, the emphasis on this water resilience and the inclusion of the native fish populations, restoring and maintaining the health of our watersheds, really a kind of a balanced perspective and an integrated perspective expressed in a way that it hasn't been expressed by before in many cases by the leaders who have the ability to make that happen. So I'm really encouraged by that. Fish and Wildlife Service shares those desires. We have a commitment to working toward that balance and a resilient water future. So to the extent that we can help, we're here to provide that assistance. So thank you for the opportunity to hear what the state has moving ahead now, and we're ready to help.
Thank you, Dan. Thanks for being here. After Maria Russell Calejo, could you say a few words about how the Delta Plan and the Water Resilience Portfolio could work together? So Maria and then Russell.
Thank you, Susan. Yeah, thank you. Dan said it well. I'm very encouraged by the state leadership. Appreciate the emphasis on integration. Climate change resiliency in the state clearly affects native fish, affects cold water salmon. Working towards water portfolio that completely integrates that with water supply is important. I think we clearly see, as managers of salmon in the state, we clearly see a lot of those conflicts between water supply and cold water fish. Continuing to manage fish on a valley floor that's getting hotter doesn't help the fish. It doesn't help with water supply. So we, as you know, have been working to bring forward some of the ideas on reintroducing key populations to habitats above rim dams. So not sure if that fits in with some of the thinking on the state side, but that's something we're keenly interested in as an agency and have been working on the science side and kind of in tech transfer, where that's been done more in the Pacific Northwest, to bring those ideas forward and work with various partners that would take to pilot those efforts. And, you know, in general, I think clearly in the Delta and other places, there are many ways where you have potential conflicts between species and water supply. The more we can improve species resiliency, the more we reduce those conflicts with water supply. So clearly you guys are working towards that, and we're happy to partner as a federal agency with NOAA. We do have, we also at a federal level are working on a one NOAA effort towards improving forecasting and reliability, and those trying to target some of those forecasting efforts towards drought management and western water management. You've seen that in the memo, the presidential memo in October. So if I or can help to target some of those resources in California, I'm happy to be a liaison to make those conversations happen.
Thank you, Maria. And welcome, Russell. I understand that this is your first week on the job. So thank you for being with us today.
All right. Figure out the microphone first. Yes, so thank you. I really appreciate being here. I am new in many ways. It's actually my second week officially in my position. So what that is I'm the Deputy Regional Director for Operations of the Bureau of Reclamation here in Sacramento. So our director, Onis Conant, he was going to be here today, was looking forward to being here today, but unfortunately had another important meeting that he had to attend at the exact same time. So I'm here instead, but I'm grateful for that and thankful for the opportunity to say a few words and introduce myself. It's not about me, but I think since I know a few of you in the room, some very well, just a little bit about me as we launch in this adventure together under my, appointment as the Deputy Regional Director. Been with Reclamation for 22 years now. Most of that's been on the Colorado River. So I'm no stranger to complex river systems with many challenges, as well as a very large, diverse, and experienced stakeholder group with a lot of expertise to bear. The last 2 years I've been here in the Mid-Pacific region, been focusing on Central Valley project issues, first in our Folsom office and then most recently in our front office. So hopefully a combination of my experience as well as some of the thoughts I have scrambled around in my head will help us get through some of these challenges that we're going to be facing. And, my director and I both share two things that we wanted to highlight today with what folks have already highlighted, and that was the integration and the partnering aspects of what we're up to here. Operationally, the Central Valley Project and the State Water Project are an integrated project, right? We look forward to continuing our partnership as well as expanding upon it. Right, and that is something that's very important to myself. It's very important to Ernest. It extends all the way up to our commissioner as well. So we're very much looking forward to that here in the near future and over the long term. A couple things that came to mind two aspects in particular is science. As part of this the resiliency strategy, we want to bring the best science to bear. Reclamation is committed to that. We've all made large investments in science to date. We're going to continue to do that and increase that over time. So we're very interested in that, as well as infrastructure. Maybe you're saying, okay, Reclamation guy, of course infrastructure is important. Well, it is, I think, and as part of this, it's important as well, particularly conveyance. That's the Frying Current Canal, the Delta Mendota Canal, as well as the California Aqueduct. We have some issues with conveyance that we have to fix in order to be able to deliver water, and storage projects are a part of that as well. I'll conclude there, but very much looking forward to being a part of the discussion today and in the future.
Great. Thank you, Russell. Thanks for being with us. I'd like our U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Representative Cindy Tejeda to address this concept of the water resilience portfolio and the Delta Plan working together. The Corps makes a big difference in what happens in the Delta, so welcome, Cindy.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Cindy Tejeda from the Corps of Engineers South Pacific Division Office in San Francisco, and I just wanted to mention that we do support the state's efforts in this regard in the water resilient portfolio. The Corps of Engineers prioritizes natural and nature-based solutions to improve resiliency and redundancy in the system. We call it engineering with nature. We'll have emerging guidance coming out in 2020, so that's something our agency is certainly looking to do more of in the future. We should be leveraging integrated water resources management, which is what we've talked about a lot today, and part of it is looking at gaps in appropriations and authorities, and in that regard, I think the federal family could probably work a little bit better together. And lastly, I just think we should focus on watershed solutions, which we've also mentioned, looking from headwaters down to the ocean. It's really important to look at it from the system perspective. And that's all I have today. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. And with U.S. EPA here today, we have David Smith. And then after David, Mike Jackowski with the U.S. Geological Survey. Your thoughts on this topic, please.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to be here. I certainly want to echo what our other federal partners have said about our enthusiasm about what's going on here and our willingness to help out. I wanted to note, I think we can learn a lot from the DPIC structure in terms of providing a model on how coordination can happen between the federal level and state level. A lot of the focus of the resilience plan is what is the state of California going to do? And that's plenty, to take on. But I think in order to truly be successful, we've got to figure out how can we also sort of have, through this state effort, tell the feds what you need, And I think that there's opportunities. And I was really taken by Wade's point about the need to have discrete actions here and to not just sort of be hot air policy, wishes. So I think it'll be important to figure out ways through this to not only sort of talk about how you align things at the state level, but to search for opportunities and how we can do so with the federal agencies. I'll mention that at the behest of the Water Subcabinet, which is subcabinet level agencies, really in all of the federal agencies that have a role in water management, we were directed recently to develop a national water reuse action plan. And this is intended to foster a much greater commitment to integrated water management with a particular focus on conservation, water recycling, stormwater capture, and the like, and with an eye toward identifying what's getting in the way of progress at the different levels of government and possibly in the private sector, and also looking at ways to overcome those kinds of barriers. And so I'm on the core development team of that water use action plan, and so I'm really hoping that out of efforts like this, we're going to get discrete asks on what do we need to do, whether it be at the policy and regulatory level in terms of how the federal agents carry out our regulatory authorities, but also looking to things like funding. We could do a lot better aligning how we fund infrastructure, restoration, and other projects as each of our agencies kind of does our own thing in our own little silos. That I'm personally interested in focusing in those areas. But I'm also interested in exploring mechanisms to overcome this really daunting issue. So there's fragmentation in how governments works between the federal and state levels and among the different agencies, then complicated by the fragmentation of water governance at the local level here. So we're really game to get into the details and to hear how others want to get into the details about articulating, what are some of the barriers to achieving this vision that I think people are articulating in kind of a common way, and then figuring out, what we can do with the U.S. EPA to kind of do our part on this to try to service it. I mean, overall, we're really good at goal setting in this area, but I still see a lot of our own programs at EPA being a little hidebound and tradition-bound, and a bunch of our counterparts at the state level and the other federal agencies doing the same thing. So if we can view this as kind of a kick in the pants to get us working together a little better, all the better. So I'm really happy that this conversation's going on. Like I said, I think the DPIC model is something to look at as a way to bridge the state-federal bridge that needs to be addressed.
Great. Thank you very much, David. Yeah, the Government Accountability Office, I think, agrees with you. We had them at a previous meeting, and they said some similar things. So thank you. Thank you for emphasizing that. Mike.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. I represent the U.S. Geological Survey. I'm here for Mark Sogi, who's the director of the newly constituted Southwest region. Mark was unable to be here. And I just want to be clear before I make any comments that USGS is somewhat different from a lot of the other entities here in that we don't participate in resource management, so we don't take positions on any matters of public policy in regard to those resources. I will make a couple of comments regarding science, which we're deeply involved in. The first is that this dialogue that we're having is invigorating, in part because it implicates statewide issues and not just Delta issues. So for us, most of the work that we conduct on an ongoing basis within the Delta is surface water oriented. But in fact, the dialogue we're having now really implicates not only surface water statewide, where we conduct stream gauging as we do in other states in the United States and other assessments of surface water. Also groundwater, which we have historically done a lot of in California, but we're doing even more now for groundwater assessment and modeling, a lot of it on behalf of the state board. But also water quality issues, some of those are groundwater issues, some of those are surface water issues. And I guess my principal comment at this point would be that depending on the direction this dialogue goes and depending on what's in the portfolio and what assessments are required, It may be important to consider how all of the science that we're currently doing, and there's a lot of it, it works together because it'll be important to make sure the work we're doing and that others are doing with regard to both surface and groundwater issues actually is sufficient to support the decisions that some of the parties around this table are going to need to make. So we're happy to participate in that dialogue, and we have a fair amount of technical expertise within our bureau that we can bring to bear when there are questions.
Great, thank you, Mike. Yes, it's amazing the technology and science and how we've progressed since the 80s. It's also a little overwhelming, so thank you for your comment. I'd like now to move to the Central Valley Flood Protection Board. I think Karen expressed that this is a very important plan, the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan. And then after Clyde, let's hear from our agencies that are responsible for the Delta as place and the Delta ecosystem, Campbell and Oscar. So, Clyde.
Okay, thank you. My name is Clyde McDonald. I'm on the Central Valley Flood Protection Board. We're kind of from what we've had so far, than sort of the higher level people, and we're kind of down in the infrastructure. I'll explain that and kind of see how we fit in here. Our partners, the Department of Water Resources, we're the state partners working with the Federal Corps of Engineers on 1,600 miles of levees in the Central Valley, and that includes about one-third of the levees in the Delta. I mean, this is the conveyance system, it's flood control, and so forth. We, with the department proposed, and then it came to the board to develop a flood plan in 2012. We had a lot of acceptance by the local agencies and the NGO community. Nobody challenged the EIR. We had an update of that in 2017. We do a lot of work with our local agencies and listen to them a lot, and it pays off big time. It's a 30-year plan, so we're not going to solve everything all at once. And the big problem we have is that most of the levees that were constructed in the Central Valley are basically big piles of dirt. Big piles of dirt are generally not all that strong, if you want to think about it. You might build something out of concrete, build it like a dam, and you're going to get good response. But we have these old levees which were not designed to protect urban areas and to provide high levels of protection. So that's kind of that. Anyway, our focus is kind of threefold. The first one is to improve urban flood protection, and that's kind of strengthening the levees. The big problems we have with the levees these days is what we call under seepage, that water is moving underneath the levee and coming up on the other side, or it's moving through the levee, causing the levee to fail. So that's the big problem. And so the urban protection, a lot of it is putting walls down, deep walls down the middle of the levee to prevent that from happening. Second goal is to develop multipurpose projects. And our third is to improve levee maintenance. We oversee roughly 80 levee maintenance agencies that are local, and we really need to improve the kind of maintenance that is done. It's really not at an acceptable level. And last two items, I think our biggest challenge going forward is going to be trying to improve levee maintenance, and that's going to be expensive, and some people aren't going to want to do it, but if you want to have a flood protection system, you really have to do that. And then I think longer term, the biggest challenge is going to be flood control in the San Joaquin. Climate change is going to change how much of the precipitation comes down as rain instead of snow, and the San Joaquin is basically a snow melt runoff flood problem that occurs in June and July, whereas here in Sacramento, it rains, it runs off. And so if it rains, it comes off faster, so we're going to have that. So that's a big challenge. And then that also affects the Delta, and we're also going to have significant issues around sea rise as it affects the Delta. So those are the things we're working with. So thank you.
Thank you, Clyde. You'll be busy for a long, long time. Campbell.
Great. Thank you, Chair Tatayan and Secretaries. It's great to be here. Certainly share the optimism and excitement about the opportunity to create a water resilience strategy. The Delta Conservancy stands at the ready as an implementing entity to work with the agencies and provide a platform for local engagement with the community in the implementation of a water resiliency strategy, as well as the Delta Plan and Water Settlement Agreement implementation efforts as well. And we also work to help fund Delta as Place projects. So we're very excited about it all coming together and working collectively to help try to be an implementer to move these efforts forward as we define them. I am looking forward to ensuring that one of our sort of pet areas is highlighted in the water resilience strategy. Delta subsidence is ongoing. We can now quantify the threat to our water supply. We can quantify the carbon emissions that result from that. And we have market-based mechanisms that can actually incentivize land use change in the Delta compete with current commodities in the Delta. So it's an exciting time, and so look forward to making sure that that's front and center. I will say through some of the Delta planning that we've done, we've had large groups of Delta community members, including the engineers, land use or landowners, farmers, and all agree that subsidence is one of the key challenges that we really need to address in the Delta. So look forward to that, making those connections and making sure that that's part of the resilience strategy. Thank you.
Thank you, Campbell. And finally, Oscar Villegas, Chair of the Delta Protection Commission.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So maybe as a opportunity to sort of identify the hats that I wear. So by the way in which I end up here at this table is in part because I'm a local elected official at the county level representing District 1 in Yolo County, which includes West Sacramento and Clarksburg. Then chair of the Delta Protection Commission by way of my role as a local elected official, and then serving on the Delta Stewardship Council. So that brings me to the table here. And the reason I want to share that is because I think much of what I've heard this morning in large part speaks to the togetherness and the localness in which, at the end of the day, whatever the resiliency, however it's defined, and whatever those actionable items are, at the end of the day, they end up in a place very localized, in our front doorstep, right? These are the residents that live, eat, and breathe in California that have to understand, in large part, what's happening to their water and what is a resilience plan and what does resilience mean and what part do they take in implementing this plan? Because at the end of at the very end of the day, it's going to begin and end with every single resident in California, right? We all can speak of it in many ways. So I say that simply to underscore the notion that whatever it is we do, it has to have, for lack of a better description, checkpoints locally to make sure that there is buy-in locally, and maybe not 100%. I mean, nobody gets everything they want, but I do believe in whatever the plan draft form looks like in October and the final form by Thanksgiving has to have these checkpoints that ensure that at the localist level there is at least some awareness, some knowledge about what happens when you flush the toilet and what does that mean to the drinking water further downstream. And so I think that regional self-sufficiency has to be kind of core at whatever we do to bring in the localized perspective as we move forward. But I think it's a great opportunity. It's a kind of a restart in some ways to have a conversation with all the key stakeholders here today. But I do think there needs to be, and I'll continue to kind of beat that drum, the local drum. That's my role, is to make sure that there is at least some understanding, some awareness, some buy-in, because most folks don't know what resilience means, right? They turn on their tap water, water comes out, they flush, it goes away. But resilience is going to mean something, I think, very different in the very near future. And we all know we're probably already oversubscribed to what we say is available. But I think it's a term that is going to have to get embedded in people's daily conversations so that we're more mindful of this limited, precious resource that we have. So that's what I have to offer this morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Oscar. Thank you for reminding us of the checkpoints that we really do have to build into our process. So I know some folks are here to offer your ideas, especially to the... Oh, John, I'm sorry. You know, I see you every day. I guess I just...
Don't worry. Okay, I want to add, so actually I don't have anything really new to add because much has already been said, but I did want to highlight a few things in my role as a Delta lead scientist. You did get a copy of the Delta Science Plan, which you all endorsed, and I think really the value of the science plan is that you all endorsed it and that it really is an effort led by the science program, but really an effort of all of the agencies working within the Delta. And I think it is critical that in this new resilience effort that we really incorporate science, and I think that's already been stated. I think some specific ways to think about the way we can incorporate science are open data issues, so I think that's really super valuable. Incorporating new technologies and really thinking about what the opportunities are for bringing new technologies into the way not only that we manage water, but that we understand and learn about water. And then also thinking about identifying critical uncertainties about impacts, about management issues, and really embracing adaptive management and the incorporation of science into those management efforts. And then has also already been mentioned improving our efforts at forecasting. So really thinking about how do we embrace climate change into the way that we model and forecast and understand impacts into the future. And then also, in addition to those efforts, I really want to echo the emphasis on the watershed approach. So I think within the Delta, we've really, we're focused on improving management efforts within the Delta, but we have really realized that linking up with the Bay, linking up with the watershed is really critical. So I think that's something that I appreciate and I'm sure will be incorporated.
Great. Thank you, John. So I wanted to alert folks that Secretary Crowfoot will have to leave. He's hosting a speaker series on a topic near and dear to my heart. I worked on floodplain issues for the Nature Conservancy from 2006 to 2013, so I am so happy to see this happening. It's so great. But I wanted to give folks a chance to speak directly to the secretaries. If you have some input you are compelled to share with them before Wade has to leave. And also, I don't know if Karen will be staying with us or
what. Stuck with me.
Great. Thank you. We don't have to have it all within the next 5 minutes before Wade leaves, but please share your input. We're all here to listen to you. Any folks want to share your thoughts with Wade?
Great. Maybe while she's coming up, I might just make a few comments on the comments of our federal partners. One is to David's comment. I think this model of the DPIC is really powerful, and sitting around and actually institutionalizing, getting together on a regular basis and sharing information can be helpful. And I think Nancy, take note. This could be a model for broad statewide coordination. I mean, I heard a lot. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers actually working on engineering by nature by 2020. Didn't know that. I don't know much about NIMF's reintroduction of the threatened species above dams and this sub-cabinet national strategy on water reuse. So I think there's just real important value in that. Let me just say that there's two pieces of that touch the Delta that I neglected to mention, which are important for this context, and they are sort of almost like givens within our water portfolio. The first is this effort underway on the so-called voluntary agreements, which is really about coordination and integration. And this relates to the state water board's need to integrate or update the Bay Delta water quality plan. The state water board has to do that to abide state and federal law. They would normally do it through a regulatory action. This big effort started under the Brown administration with my colleagues. We've kept it going in the Newsom administration to really find a 15-year agreement among water users and conservation groups that can protect and restore species in the Delta in a voluntary manner. Terribly complex, multi-month negotiations. Some of the folks that are in that room are here in our audience today, but we think it's a paradigm shift. Of really identifying, look, we need regulations, there will be litigation, but we don't want to manage fundamentally by litigation and regulation. We want to try to figure out collaborative, multi-benefit ways to proceed. So that's one. And then the second is modernizing infrastructure, and specifically modernizing Delta conveyance, which is obviously a topic not without controversy, but I just want to be totally transparent that the governor was clear that while he didn't and doesn't support the twin tunnel water fix project, he does support a smaller capacity single tunnel conveyance for two critical reasons. One is obviously earthquake risk. And as I've been educated, our earthquake experts tell us there's a reasonable chance of a Northern California earthquake that could take out levees and impact our water supply. The U.S. has not known a catastrophe where millions of people don't have water supply for several months, number one. And number two is climate change, which we're talking about. Whether conveyance is modernized in the Delta, there will be significant saltwater intrusion with sea level rise. The argument for a tunnel is to, during wet periods, is taking that water from the North Delta, 15 feet above sea level, and to be distributed, which is will likely be South Delta, 3 feet above sea level. Our state guidance developed carefully last year suggests if we want infrastructure to operate in 2100, we need to anticipate 5 to 10 feet of sea level rise. So just wanted to mention those two pieces are areas that we're moving forward within this, and I didn't want to paper over those important processes.
Thank you. My name is Deirdre Desjardins. I'm with California Water Research. I'm a former physicist. I worked at Los Alamos National Labs, NOS Ames, and the Santa Fe Institute for Complex Systems Theory. I've worked on climate change and California developed water issues for the past decade. And I wanted to commend the Delta Stewardship Council on their policy on best available science. And I think this is going to be critical for the success of the water portfolio. Wade Crowfoot mentioned sea level rise. It's not just 10 feet by 2100. It could be 15 feet by 2120, which will be within the next 100 years. It's 7 feet even on 2120, even under the intermediate scenario. For the Delta Tunnel, the only simulation of whether water would stay fresh at the proposed North Delta intakes was done in 2010 for 55 inches of sea level rise. The simulation also included simulation of large-scale levee failure with sea level rise, but it was based on modeling for the Hayward scenario earthquake, so it assumed the whole channel configuration in the Delta would stay the same. The grid also did not include any islands in the North Delta. So basically, it assumed implicitly that no islands in the North Delta would flood with sea level rise, when in reality, subsided lands go all the way up to Cortland. For this reason, I believe that the conclusion in the 2010 modeling that the North Delta intakes would not be affected by sea level rise or large-scale levee failure is likely wrong. The Delta Independent Science Board has recommended simulating the hydrodynamics of the Delta with island flooding, and I think this must be done. We need to validate the concept of the North Delta intakes and their location before going forward with preliminary engineering, as is currently happening. Second, I wanted to talk about flooding. Research published by Scripps Institute last week showed a doubling of the frequency of 99th percentile precipitation events. We expect that 1 in 100-year floods and 1 in 200-year floods will become more common with climate change. There are known deficits in spillway capacity of dams and also in flood capacity in the San Joaquin Valley. It will be essential to assess and upgrade these spillway capacity as needed. Funding needed maintenance and upgrades of levees is also going to be essential to protect vulnerable populations. So in the rush, it's easy to get excited about new infrastructure, but we need to prioritize our existing infrastructure, protecting our existing built environment, making sure our existing dams are safe. Finally, I wanted to talk about drought. up until the mid-1980s, the State Water Project was managed to maintain deliveries in a repeat of the 1929-34 drought. But a study was done which estimated that a six-year drought would only recur once in 400 years. Based on that study, State Water Project carryover targets, storage targets for Oroville and San Luis were changed to much more aggressively deliver water allocations. And this risked draining the reservoirs to dead pool in a repeat in a multi-year drought. When we had to declare temporary urgency change in January of 2014, Oroville was down near 1 million acre feet. And the floor for carryover storage target was actually 1 million acre feet. It was too low. It's since been increased to a floor of 1.3 million acre feet, but that might not be enough. I think we need to manage both the State Water Project and urban supplies for potentially for six-year droughts, because we're going to see increased frequency and severity of droughts. So both State Water Project reservoirs and local reservoirs need to be managed more conservatively, and we need to look at early actions in droughts that are proactive, so we don't need to do temporary change petitions and take water from the environment. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deirdre. Do we have any other folks who'd like to share your thoughts with the DPIC members? Yes. Could you state your name and affiliation, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Name is Jeet Dua. I'm the legal counsel for the Central Valley Flood Protection Board. And quickly just wanted to expand on a little bit of what Board Member McDonald had stated, and then some personal observations I've made in the work that I do for the board. First, Clyde indicated that a huge issue for the board and one of the focuses is maintenance. And in the update of the flood plan, it was identified that just current need for operating and maintenance for the flood system for our locals is $130 million annually. And what's being funded now is $30 million. So there's a huge gap. And that's one of the big focuses for the board right now, is trying to find ways to fund that gap. Obviously, the locals already being assessed, an overlay of a state assessment or some other assessment is going to be an issue, but that is a challenge. What we have seen is where the state has made investments in the system, they performed as expected. So in these recent floods that we've had in the past year and 2 years ago, where those investments have been made, the system performed admirably. The other thing from a personal standpoint, I've noticed, and as you talked about operating in silos, one of the issues I see that's coming forward for the board, we've talked about SGMA. The flood boards, obviously, our role is to get floodwaters off of lands back into rivers. And what we're seeing with SGMA is exactly the opposite. We want people are coming to the board asking for permits to essentially reverse the system, taking floodwaters and putting them onto ag lands or what have you for groundwater inundation, percolation, things of that nature. So what we realized in one permit in particular request, we actually asked the state board to come and give kind of a primer on their permitting process and things like that, because our jurisdiction is not to determine whether someone has a water right or if there's excess water, those sorts of things. It's more about, I think, interagency collaboration, trying to break down those conflicts and legal authorities, what we can and what we can't do. I think if there's more coordination, perhaps it takes a revision of some statutory language to allow us to collaborate and make those things happen, I think would be wonderful. So just a note of personal observation and some of the challenges that we face. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think a lot of us agree. Do we have anyone else? Oh, please come forward.
Hi, thank you for taking comment today. My name is Jennifer Nevels. I'm with the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California. I just wanted to say that we certainly support the governor's effort to implement a resilient portfolio. That's something that we've been working on as a region since the 1990s drought, and it's proven very successful. So, you know, thank you to Joaquin for the shout out. As of last fiscal year, we locally produced about 1.6 million acre feet of supplies from desalination, groundwater recovery, recycling, and conservation that was not in place in the 90s. So, you know, there are gains to be made in that arena still, but they become more difficult and more expensive. So, you know, we would look to the state and your agencies to help us move forward, looking at potential areas such as direct potable reuse and outdoor water use efficiency. These are areas that, you know, sort of prove hard to tackle, but those are where the big gains are, at least in Southern California. Still, with our integrated resources plan approach is to continue developing those local supplies, but also maintaining our imported supplies is critical to our portfolio. And I think we've heard recognition of that today. You know, Delta conveyance is still important to us. It supports those local supply productions. It supports our groundwater basins and our recycling. It's still key to our agency and all of Southern California. I think I echo a lot of what was said here. I won't rehash it all, but, you know, I'm encouraged to see that you're looking towards some agency alignment between all of you to support watershed approaches, to support Delta ecosystem restoration, science, voluntary agreements. Those are all key to providing resilience to that state water project supply. We would like to see existing policies such as SGMA and the water use efficiency legislation and drought contingency planning efforts continue and bear fruit as we go forward. Safe drinking water for all Californians, very important in maintaining state, you know, resilience as a state together. Data, technology, innovation, if you can be a sort of clearinghouse for those sorts of things, we support that. And also, we're very supportive of some of the things that Carla talked about, and I think those are investing in the human infrastructure. So as a state, you're probably in a similar situation as Metropolitan, where half your workforce could retire now. So we see, you know, investing in those young, diverse people to come up and make these decisions and help implement this stuff is very important going forward. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm sure we'll hit you up in other listening sessions, and we'll certainly be providing written comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Jennifer. Good morning, OSHA. How are you?
Good, thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'll work on some written comments. I know that's more helpful, but since we're having a conversation, I'll just make some short comments on. I work with local agencies of the North Delta, which is a coalition of reclamation and water districts in the North Delta, and a lot of the other local entities on Delta and water issues. And I think, you know, it seems like we're getting a good start on the initiative going forward, and I think it's good everyone's talking about it. I think the process and the listening tours could benefit from a closer definition of what we think resilience is and what we think what's the goal of the portfolio. You know, are we just trying to, we've done a lot, even in the water plan, obviously, has a lot of great things in it, but is there a numeric or quantitative or more objective way that we can define what the outcomes we are trying to seek with this process are? Because otherwise it does risk, you know, just turning into a long list of things that are good ideas, but that don't have an outlet for how they actually get implemented. So this is a good opportunity, but I think we need to get to the draft report that was mentioned in October and a final report in November. I think right now, early on, trying to set out, at least even as a straw man, what you think the goal is that we're trying to reach would help focus everyone. And then we could talk, you know, and then we could also talk about whether that goal is a shared goal, and hopefully we can find one that is. I think, and also being very careful about defining best available science, and I know Delta Council has done a good job of trying to actually define that within the Delta, and that definition may work outside the Delta as well. That's going to be helpful for getting buy-in and people feeling comfortable with the outcome, is that there's a commitment to best available science and a actually defined version of what that means to us. And then I think that we need to do a little more to the governor's executive order talks about the development of collaborative strategies between stakeholders and the agencies. Later on, we're just talking about input, you know, and so I think we want to be careful about how's that collaboration, and hopefully at the end of it, everyone feels like, or at least most people feel like, that collaboration actually occurred. And again, having that structure around which we're trying to build is going to be important. And then I think it's in the executive order, but I want to stress it. I work down in the Delta a lot of times, and, you know, we're always talking about kind of what shows up there. Two-thirds of the state's draining to there. You know, some people may call it a toilet bowl. We don't have a lot of power as folks in the Delta who are working with water there to know how and try to change what's coming into the Delta in terms of pollutants and other things. But there's we do refer to in the executive order, it mentions forests and watersheds, and I heard earlier a focus on a watershed approach, and I think folks who've been in environmental issues a long time know that we need to get back to a bigger watershed approach and to actually connecting up all the way from the sea all the way back up the watersheds to the top. And so there's some really great work that's going on to where we could actually invest in our upper watersheds to create more water and also improve the timing of water that's coming down, so we're not just fighting about what ends up down at the bottom of the watershed. And I think that's the kind of thing that you can get a lot of people agreeing about, making those kinds of investments. Obviously, when we are talking about landscape level changes and whatnot, I mean, we've worked a lot in the Delta and have a lot more work to do on restoration and trying to make sure that there's a good neighbor policies and ways that we're actually protecting the neighbors and not creating more problems when we do restoration. We need to have those same kind of commitments in the upper watersheds for those communities and cities. But so anyway, those are some of my initial ideas. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for taking the time, Moshe. Mark, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I'm the only person in the room that actually lives in the Delta. So let me speak from that perspective. I want to thank Supervisor Villegas for his comments. I think it's essential that throughout the process, the people, the stakeholders, the people that actually live and breathe in the Delta are not just consulted, not just have the opportunity to lodge comments, but actually are engaged in the implementation of the products that you come out with at a draft stage. I think we can all agree, building on the comments I've heard today, that when you have a good process, you're going to have, hopefully, good results, or at least you maximize your opportunity to have good results. And that good process looks like, I think, a number of things that I can suggest concretely. Number one, today's topic is the Delta. But I would suggest that when you have future meetings, I would ask that you meet in the Delta, especially in the primary zone, where folks that live in the Delta, that work in the Delta, that work around the corner, farm workers, farmers, everybody, it's more convenient for them to come and to actually give you direct input and thought on what you're discussing and deciding on that day. So meeting in the Delta is just something I think is critical. Number two, when you meet in the Delta, I'd encourage you to schedule those meetings so it's advantageous for folks who live in the Delta to come. I know that that means evening meetings. I'm not suggesting Sundays or Saturdays. That's a possibility as well. But evening meetings would be so much more helpful for folks that live in the Delta but have day jobs, and they have to take time off from earning some living for their family. They're not being paid to come. But that input is critical, I think, in your process and fundamental to creating good process with the goal of creating the best possible results. People in the Delta are concern that they're not in the room, they're not at the table when the draft decisions are made, when the science is put together, and there's no concrete set of tools, there's no concrete or common set of vocabulary. There's nothing that they can kind of grab their hands on. It looks like all these different agencies represented by folks around the table and more agencies besides are kind of coming at them simultaneously. That's, I'm not saying that's true or not true, but I am saying that the feeling level is like that. And so there's a sense of just looking at the process before engaging, of being overwhelmed by all that's coming at us. So a service I think that you all could perform is to have common terms, common focus, common approach. And I think I've heard the elements of that today. We've got some great things happening in the Delta. I remember Secretary Ross being down in Clarksburg for a demonstration vineyard, which is Supervisor Villegas has supported very much. We've got vintners coming together with high school students to work in a real vineyard for planting, the training of the vines, the harvesting, et cetera, to learn hands-on, partnering again with folks in the Delta and the farmers, what it means to actually produce a crop, take it to market, et cetera. So they learn the business side, the planting side, the farming side, et cetera, and a hands-on approach. It's a really exciting program. I'm not aware of any other program like that in the state. And there are opportunities and fertile ground, if I can use that metaphor on purpose, for many other collaborations like that to take place in the Delta. The opportunities are endless. And so we're talking about flood protection, very important. We talk a little bit about water rights, extremely important. We're talking about protection of agriculture, which is the backbone of the economy of the state, critically important and mandated by statute. Protecting the cultural value and natural resources, the recreational opportunities in the Delta, mandated by statute. We can help with all of that. We can make this process even more successful, I think, than it's been contemplated in the past. And I get a sense from reading and the governor's new approach, the new way of thinking, that I think that's what he's really trying to accomplish, is a win all the way around. Not just a win for some, not just a win for others, but a win all the way around. And I think California, as was said, for the fifth largest economy in the country, in the world, we are positioned to have a world-class project with world-class results and with world-class participation from everybody all the way around. And I would ask you to think in those terms and move forward with those goals in mind. And I think it's possible to come up with something through the portfolio approach that creates those opportunities, and I'm happy to help and encourage my neighbors to do so. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Thanks for coming today. Are there other folks who would like to offer any thoughts on the water resilience portfolio and the Delta plan? Well, if there are no other folks who'd like to offer comments, I will offer one concluding comment, and I'd like to say that the 2009 Delta Reform Act created the Stewardship Council to look more holistically on water and land management affecting the Delta. So in my mind, what we do day in and day out is find ways to better fit the components of water management and land management and ecosystem management to achieve long-term resilience and overall balance in a very dynamic, ever-changing system. And on top of that, the Delta is now a national heritage area, California's first national heritage area, and I think that should be something considered in the portfolio because Oscar has the wonderful charge of coming up with a management plan for that national heritage area. And a particular interest of mine is to evaluate conveyance, storage, and operations with each other and with our natural infrastructure. So it has been a long-time wish of mine that folks begin to think about our floodplains and mountain meadows and rivers and streams and wetlands as infrastructure that can help achieve the kind of resilience that we want to achieve. And I think we have the creativity and the innovation and the technology to begin to combine our natural infrastructure with our existing infrastructure in a way that meets 21st century needs, not just design it to meet existing protections and mandates, but to go well beyond so that we are resilient for at least the next 50 to 100 years. With that, I think we can end the meeting early, Carl, yes.
Yeah, Chairwoman Tatayan, Council. I think something based on the conversation that we've had here about how we work in the Delta, just wanted to point out that the Delta Conservation Framework that the department completed 6 months ago offers a blueprint for how to conduct that kind of engagement in the Delta. And it's available on our website. I brought some copies to share with Stewardship Council staff today. But I think we went through a pretty long engagement program with folks in the Delta about how to engage. And hopefully Mark would agree that it's a pretty good framework to work from. So I just want to encourage people that this is available. It is a blueprint, you know, on how to work through those kinds of things to come up with mutually agreeable or acceptable conservation strategies within the Delta, and it would apply any place else outside of the Delta, I think, as well.
Thank you, Carl. Anyone, any other DFIC members before we close the meeting? Nope. Well, again, thank you all for taking the time to come and be with us today, and remember that you can provide written input to Nancy. Thank you.